It's time for Lunch Hour Reviews.
He was licking me.
What?
He was licking me!
Lunch Hour Reviews.
Man, I hate until he bursts.
I'm painting me.
It's feeding time. I'm Mindy.
And I'm Darren, and we are the Rants Macabre, a part of the Fangoria Podcast Network. For more information about the network, including other programs, how to follow the show, and find past episodes of the Rants Macabre, please visit fangoria.com. So, welcome to this episode of our Lunch Hour Reviews series. We are outside, live, in Bryant Park.
Yes, we are. We're trying something different.
In lovely, noisy Midtown Manhattan.
Yeah, but I think it'll be cool. Oh, look, there we go. There's already some New York noise.
Today we're going to be covering a couple things between movies, the winner of the March Madness Save Horror Bracket competition.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, it's us.
It's me.
some comics. And we have an interview with Alex J. Mann, the writer and director of 3 Seconds, the Snapchat film that's been sort of catching fire on the internet. Okay.
All right. Let's talk about me first. Let's talk about how I won.
Victorious you.
I'm very victorious. I never win things, but this year I actually won my NCAA bracket
and my March Madness
bracket. This has been a
We got to get you a lottery ticket on the way out of here.
I know, right? So I won. Not well. We all sucked really bad.
You came out from the back.
It's like the lowest scoring March Madness ever. You know, like it was very low.
Okay, so specifically we're talking about Keith and April from SaveHorror.com. And every year for the last 3 years, they've been doing a sort of bracket system where fans vote on their favorite horror movies.
Right.
And I guess in theory, people could be voting on just who they think is going to win.
I vote for kind of my favorites.
Yeah,
and
I went
personal. And I guess I did it wrong. I mean, I did it right,
you
I guess.
You did it as right as can be.
But the guys from Miskatonic Musings, so let's just start at the beginning of this. So we made a podcast pool.
Yes.
With our brackets. And we invited Women in Caskets, Miskatonic Musings, and the girls in the back row to be a part of it. Now, Miskatonic Musings, I think, except for Sean. Sean went, I think, with what he liked. But Charles and Lehman really went with what they thought was going to be successful. And it looked good for a while. Lehman was pretty much in the head of the pack for almost the whole thing.
They put a lot of their chips on The Witch. And I would never knock that movie. I loved it. However, not enough people have seen it to really give it weight, and so it lost pretty early in the process.
Yes,
Although, speaking of losing early in the process, you had 28 Days Later going all the way.
And it didn't even make it out.
It didn't make it to the second round.
Which is absurd. It's just like, I can't even talk about it. Like, I still get angry about it because what the fuck is wrong with people? 28 Days Later should have won the whole thing. It's a superior film to everything.
Okay, so what did win was A Nightmare on Elm Street, the original.
Which is fine. You know, I have great feeling, like positive feelings for Nightmare.
Sure.
You don't.
Well, I just think it's a movie that gets by on nostalgia. I don't think it holds up especially well. I think even among the series, not the best film of the series.
But it makes you feel good when you watch it.
Not me. I mean, it makes me feel good because I laugh at the last moment.
Sure, yeah.
But aside from that, I could take or leave it. but in any case, you won. The losers, so this is more a competition where the goal is not to lose, less so to win. But so the losers have to review a movie that Mindy has chosen.
Yes.
And you chose some stinkers.
I chose some good ones, if good equals bad.
Oh, did I say stinkers? Yeah, no. Perfume-smelling victorious winners. Yes. No, why don't you tell them what you gave?
So, and I thought about it really, I really thought about it. And I was thinking about one movie in particular, and Darren texted me, really, really late at night after he found out that I won. And he sent me a text message like, please don't do that. We'll look like assholes. So I said, fine. I won't do that. But I chose some other ones, and I think I chose well. I gave The Girls in the Back Row because they seem to like art film. So I thought, what better art film than Bloodsucking Freaks? I think they'll really appreciate it.
Yeah, ladies, I am sorry.
For Women in Caskets, I chose a really great film that I stumbled upon, and I'm really proud of myself. It's the Gingerbread Man versus Evil Bong, which, because I was like, oh, Gingerbread Man might be good for them. And then I thought, well, Gingerbread 3 might be good for them. And Gary then I saw Busey Evil Bong and I said, maybe Evil Bong is good for them. And then it was like Jesus Christ himself put them both together and made Gingerbread Man versus Evil Bong. So
Providence.
Yeah.
Gingerbread Man versus Evil Bong sounds like you and I made the world's shittiest horror movie only so they would have to watch it and review it.
Maybe we did.
But in any case, Gary Busey does the voice of the Gingerbread Man. I don't know if you looked at the IMDb breakdown of actors and credits.
I knew. Well, he's not actually in this. They're only using like old
archive
footage. I mean, the thing, and people complain about that movie and they say, well, this is insulting to the people who've watched Gingerbread Man 1, 2, and 3 because this is just reusing old footage. And so basically what they've done with this film, I think, I don't know, I haven't watched it, don't want to, but they've seemed to have spliced like the other movies together to make now this one movie.
Oh, it's like in South Park original. Where they chop together Chef's old lines
yeah, right.
to like, I'm going home to my planet now. Like it's Poochie all
yeah,
over again.
Pretty much. And lastly, for Miskatonic Musings, I thought they would really appreciate, you know, they're also literary guys. Yeah, sure. I don't know. They like to read. So I thought
Fancy Pants knows how to read.
They know how to read. They like books. And I thought, what better like film adaptation of a book would be 2008's Twilight. So I'm like really excited. You know, it's a vampire movie. It's horrific. And I thought they would really like it.
You know, I still haven't watched Twilight. Not, I mean, there's no cause for me to, but even just to familiarize myself with the, you know, cultural abortion that is Twilight.
Yeah, you know, I can't even, like, I've read them all and I've watched them and I don't know why. Like, yeah. I don't know why. It
Me
was
neither.
A shameful, shameful thing that while I was reading it on the train, I would, like, fold over the book so no one could see what I was reading. And I remember I had to get the last one and I was at I was at the Barnes & Noble down in Union Square, and I needed to go buy the last one because I apparently didn't want to wait until Amazon.
And you kept telling strangers, it's for my niece. It's not for me.
I'm in the young adult section or young artist section, young adult section, and I'm going, there's a girl there who's like really cool looking, and I'm like, I need to find a book. And she's like, sure, you know, what are you looking for? And I was like, I'm looking for The Last Twilight. And she's like, what? I go, I'm looking for The Last Twilight. It was so embarrassing. And then I told her, I know it's really embarrassing. I need to find The Last Twilight.
Okay, so the listeners can check out those respective podcasts to hear their input because they also have to say three nice things.
And they have to be genuine nice things.
Each of those films.
Genuinely nice things about those films.
So heads up for the women in caskets and the girls in the back row, Kate and Tab, and Miskatonic Musings, Charles, Sean, and Lehman. Godspeed, all. You're not my enemies. I wouldn't wish this upon enemies.
I just never win, so like I'm so excited about it.
You don't know what to do with yourself.
With all this power.
So we're going to be talking about two Netflix movies, but starting off, we're going to talk about Circle.
Yeah, 2015 Circle. And it's one of those films that, if the listener knows, I love films that don't really exist. And I don't care to know what happened before. I don't really care to know what happens after. I like movies that are kind of in that moment. This is definitely one of those films. It's 50 people in a black room. They have to stand the entire time. And there's a killer laser beam killing them that they vote for.
You know, it's for anybody who thought that Cube wasn't stripped down enough. They've broken down.
It's very much like Cube.
A sci-fi premise to like the bare bones of a scenario where how many people do we know how many people start off?
There's 50.
There's 50 people that start off in a single black room with no seeming edges, no walls.
You cannot leave your spot.
They learn very quickly that there are dire repercussions for stepping outside of your own personal circle.
Right.
Don't move.
And we're off to the races. So as the viewer, have as much information as they do.
Exactly. And I like that. I like feeling like that.
Yeah.
What you start to find out is every so many minutes, a person gets struck down by a center sort of laser beam.
Yeah, there's like a timer. There's a sort of sci-fi kitchen clock.
And it's seemingly random at first, and then they discover that they're actually voting for it.
It's us.
Us?
What do you mean?
We're choosing who dies.
And no one can see each other's votes, but now they have to bide some time to figure this out and choose who's dying next. They need to start agreeing is the idea of who's going to die next. So, you know, they go through simple things like old people first, which the old people don't really care for.
Yeah, the science behind it all was going to get away from them anyway.
And there's some people who are playing games from Buffy the Vampire Slayer and also Angel. Julie Benz is in it, and she's...
I know her from Dexter.
...there with a man that's her husband, and there's shenanigans that go on there because lots of people are playing games, and they're trying to all get out of this.
Yeah, it's like the show Survivor, where everybody's kind of scheming in their own way.
Right.
But there's no behind the scenes, there's no testimonials. Everybody's having these conversations very publicly.
Exactly.
So it's kind of, it's a tough game of poker where you are sort of, you know, bullshitting the people you need or who you think you can get away with bullshitting.
Right.
And then sort of playing on people's sympathies. And
because there's a huge wrench thrown into the whole thing because there is a little kid, there's a little girl, and then there is a pregnant woman. And so that's kind of the big kind of elephant in the room of we're not going to probably kill them, are we? But even if it's down to them as the last people, what do you do?
Right. And it seems, those characters are also reluctant to sort of pick other people out.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. It's an interesting give and take throughout. I don't know. It helped my attention. You had kind of mixed feelings about it?
I mean, it's not great. I mean, it reminds me of, you know, those films that are made in Canada. You know, those early kind of sci-fi films. Very similar to Cube.
Okay.
I love Cube, but you can watch, especially if you watch something like Hypercube and Cube Zero, you can really see the cracks in the system. And this is one of those. It's a great story. I think it's a great premise. Love the ending. It's an ending that is my cup of tea. And
yeah,
I love
it does sci-fi right.
Yeah, and I love that ending. So I guess I like the whole movie because I liked the ending. Sometimes a great ending can just really win me over. This one was written and directed, though, by Aaron Hahn and Mario Moscone. And I just think, I don't know. I would like to see more from these guys. Maybe if they had a little bit more money. Maybe if they had a little better casting director. Because Julie Benz was really kind of the only recognizable kind of
one of the
face.
Actors we saw again in The Invitation.
Yeah. His name is Jordi Villasuso, and he was in The Invitation, but, you know, it's your kind of, sci-fi batch.
Yeah, I mean, I think the movie is successful because the premise is pretty good, and it sort of builds tension.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very constructed. I kind of liked it. It was like a pinball game. You just needed to slot in the people and watch them go.
As I was watching it, I didn't like it as much as afterwards when I thought about it. And I think that's, I mean, I love Cube, and I keep going back to Cube because it's a very similar film. But I do know that there are problems with Cube. I do understand that, but I just love the premise, and I love the theory behind the whole thing. And
right.
So with Circle, I really like the premise, and I love the ending. So I'll give it some slack.
Yeah, I thought it was entertaining.
I think it's worth checking out. If you like the Cube, or if you like Cube, I think you'll like Circle.
So this is a message to newcomers to the podcast. This will be episode 64. This is kind of a shout out to the catalog. We've covered stuff old and new, stuff like Universal Monsters. We've covered serial killers.
We've covered Grand Guignol. We've covered some Spanish horror, which we still need to get back to more.
Yeah, we're here recording this in Bryant Park in central Manhattan. We've also done The Horrors of New York.
That's
and it's
right.
Not all rat related.
No, I haven't seen one rat here in Bryant Park since we've been here.
We covered horror video games in a two-part episode with your husband Jackson and my friend Pete.
Right.
And we went deep on that one.
Yeah, we did EVP where we covered White Noise 1 and 2 and had my murder basement.
Your murder basement in Queens.
Yeah, I had really wished that we would have picked something up on that EVP. So haunted.
We did the Alien Quadrilogy.
We even did some holiday horror, Christmas horror.
Yeah, and just after that we did Krampus. We've done Scandinavian horror. Krampus comes up again in Rare Exports.
Yeah.
That gets covered there. Recently we did Irish horror.
Yeah, we did summer camp horror, which has a font of things to delve in.
That one's going to get video treatment on our page as soon as I'm finished editing. It's only taken me 8 months.
Oh my God, I forgot we even like video recorded that. Like, I forgot. I've cut my hair since then. We've done Zombievers, which I loved, you didn't, whatever.
I liked Wolf Cop more, that's all I'm saying. We've covered Walking Dead. Figure since we started the podcast, there have been 2.5 seasons of Walking Dead, if you count Fear of the Walking Dead. Less enthusiastic about that.
Yeah.
But what else? We've done...
We've got to talk to some cool people. We got to talk to Corin Hardy, who did The Hollow, and that was... freaking awesome.
Yeah, it was very cool. That The Hollow is on Netflix streaming now.
We got to talk to Jay Davis, Jay Duplass, and Linus
Phillips.
And Linus Phillips for the Manson Family
Vacation.
Is it? No, it's not. Is it Manson
Family Vacation? Yeah, it is. Manson Family Vacation.
Shit. We got to talk to Jay Davis, Jay Duplass, and Linus Phillips for Manson Family Vacation.
That was fun. That was our first like big interview.
Yeah, that was cool.
We've gone back and forth with Sean and Charles and Miskatonic Musings,
yeah.
And now that they have Lehman, we're bound to have them all back on. We've done sci-fi horror and horrors in space, two different things.
Yes, they are two different things.
Our science fiction horror wound up being a lot more mad scientist horror,
right.
I felt. Yeah, we did all of the Reanimator series. That was a little bit of a struggle.
Yes. Yes, it was.
But yeah, so this is all to say that we have over 60 episodes waiting for you on iTunes. Have a look at the back catalog. They won't always be available. Storage space and costs do amount. And actually, that is my prompt to ask the listener to give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher, or now we're on Google Play Music.
Yeah.
That's started off with their podcast series. So find us, give us a review, share us with a friend, help us grow the podcast. And now back to our regularly scheduled reviews.
That's right. So what have you been watching?
Just recently, exclusive to Netflix, is the movie Hush, written and directed by Mike Flanagan, who listeners might know from Oculus.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, the like micro-budget Absentia.
Which I loved. Love that movie.
It was one of those great ones that like the premise carried through. It was a good flick. And it's probably still on Netflix streaming.
It seems to never leave.
Hush stars Kate Siegel as our deaf mute writer who lives in the woods while she works on her second novel.
I finished your book. I know you can read my lips, but I'm getting better. I want to practice. Taking another class with John, it's fun. I'm way better at understanding it than actually doing it. But.
And John Gallagher Jr. plays the maniac who shows up to torment her. John Gallagher Jr. has a pretty substantial role in 10 Cloverfield Lane. I knew I had seen him from somewhere, but he's very good. He is very... creepy, and while he is playing, you know, a maniac who's willing to stalk and kill somebody, there's like a practicality to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll talk about it in a little bit. But so the movie doesn't, I just told you the plot. It is a deaf woman who lives alone in the woods, who is stalked by a guy. There are other characters that play into it, but for the most part, it is those two people. On the IMDb trivia page, it points out there's only 15 minutes of dialogue in the whole film.
That's insane.
It is 70 minutes of like intense cat and mouse chase down and sort of her trying to figure out how to overcome the guy, how to escape. All those factors come into play. That she is deaf is, you know, it is the sort of defining element that sets this movie apart.
Right.
And I was reminded there are other movies that dealt with, say, blindness.
Uh-huh.
In those movies, like Jennifer 8 with Uma Thurman or Blink with Madeline Stowe,
right.
They kind of use that to make them almost more of a damsel in distress.
Absolutely.
Which, yeah, I don't know. Hush kind of takes, you know, takes back the night. She
Good.
Is a fully capable, you know, they talk about her having gotten meningitis when she was a kid and mm-hmm. losing both her ability to speak and hear. So she is acclimated. We start off the movie very early on that she's kind of trying her hand at cooking and sets off the fire alarm, which, you know, you don't have to be deaf to do. I do it on a regular basis.
I do it all the time.
But it does kind of bring you into this world where, you know, there's no phone calls. She's kind of got the luxury of Skype, and she can sort of sign language through conversations with relatives that way. But she is completely oblivious when this guy starts, like, smashing windows and trying to get inside.
That's crazy, yeah.
It's kind of, I mean, it's funny, the, like, movie theater stereotype of, like, bitch, don't go in there, or, like, when the audience knows something that the protagonist doesn't, there is so much of that in this movie it sort of keeps you tense, but it doesn't overdo it. It doesn't play it out. So Mike Flanagan is married to Kate Siegel, and in their courtship, they had a date out, and over the course of dinner, they're talking about, like, a thriller piece that would be, like, a, you know, easily contained premise, and how to do it. And they started, you know, coming up with the idea of a deaf protagonist, and Kate Siegel learned sign language to do the movie.
That's
and,
very
you know,
cool.
There's a good bit of that. It's kind of, I mean, you know, it comes off less as a handicap and more of just like a humanizing characteristic. Mm-hmm. It exclusively takes place at her house in the woods. You don't see anything else.
Okay.
So it's kind of, I loved it. It was bare bones filmmaking. It was made in 18 days. It was,
nice.
You know, cheap and simple and sort of perfectly executed. Like I said, it's not reinventing the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
It just does what it means to do incredibly well.
You cannot run him on that leg.
I cannot run him on that leg.
Take him down with a crossbow, but that has to be a perfect shot. In the heart or in the brain.
Heart or the brain.
Anything else is not going to cut it.
Won't cut it.
And that's a long distance weapon.
That's a long distance weapon.
It's pretty much useless indoors. It's really tough up close, and you'd have to be up close to land a kill shot. He'll be moving. Can't even figure out how to load the damn thing.
Get the power back on.
Go outside, get the power back on. I don't know if you flip the switch or cut the wires.
Hiding.
Bedroom, bathroom, loft. There are windows in each. All he needs is a rock. Loft doesn't have any cover, no doors to barricade. And best case scenario, he doesn't find you and you bleed to death. I could hide outside. Go back outside.
Crawl space.
I've tried that once. He knows you already tried that once. There's not a lot of room to maneuver. He figures out you're there.
Like I said, for a simple movie, it's incredibly effective. I don't want to say any more than I have because, you know, you start chipping away at it. But
Sure.
Yeah, check that one out. Hush, it's new on Netflix. So up next, we're going to have an interview with Alex J. Mann. He's the writer-director behind the short, very short film, 3 Seconds. And it's a Snapchat film. It's on YouTube. It does sort of go beyond the boundaries of Snapchat, but once the listener sees it, they'll understand what we're getting at. But yeah, so when he got in touch with us and the idea of a social media horror movie was presented, in the back of my head, I'd remembered that a Korean filmmaker made a cell phone movie back in 2011, and I had to look it up and be reminded that it was Park Chan-wook who directed Old Boy and, in English language, Stoker. It was a 33-minute movie that they made on an iPhone 4.
Mm-hmm.
That said, there are extra lenses.
Sure.
Everything else was a film production. So there was a crew, there was,
right.
you know, lighting. That movie, they titled for English audiences Night Fishing. The Korean title is a little bit more of a turn of phrase that isn't really, you know, part of our vernacular.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, that's one that I was sort of reminded to, I should check that out. In terms of other movies that have sort of played with the medium and sort of the means of capturing a film, recently there's the comedy Tangerine that's on Netflix streaming as well, and that was produced by the Duplass brothers.
Yeah. This one focuses much more on the actual use of the social media or the phone stuff.
The visual language specifically.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we're here with Alex J. Mann. He's a filmmaker in his own right. You've mostly worked on shorts so far?
Yeah, TV work too. As a writer, not as a director though.
Cool. And so we're talking specifically about 3 Seconds, the Snapchat film you recently put out. When did it come out?
Week ago Tuesday. So it's been, today is day 8.
Okay, and it made a splash on Reddit. And
it did. Yeah. Really picked up as of Saturday. So Saturday, we closed the week on Friday with like 25,000 views. Now we're at 400,000.
Nice.
Saturday, Lil Wayne posted on Facebook. Monday, Ashton Kutcher posted on Facebook. Tuesday, Adam Levine posted on Twitter. And then today, two people, DJ Pauly D and Eddie Griffin, posted it on Facebook. So we have this declining celebrity.
And now you're talking to us today.
Yeah. It's like, right. So we're like about 400,000 right now.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I would describe it as a digital haunting. How would you describe it? Because it is brief, it's kind of tough to talk about it without giving it away. But how would you describe the short film?
Yeah, I would, you know, it's sort of, it's a ghost story. Hopefully that doesn't give too much away. We wanted to sort of use classic horror tropes to build the suspense, play this line between, is there actually someone in her room? Is someone playing a prank on her? Or is something else going on? Is there a paranoia about the technology that's real? And is it in her head? So that's how I would describe it.
There's something to the idea that, like, social networking at this point, you know, the... if we're lucky, 8 hours of sleep that we get are some of the only moments we have without technology.
I mean, right. I wake up in the middle of the night and check my phone. I mean, I try not to be too, you know, explicit with, like, this is what I'm trying to say or this is the context. But, I mean, it was certainly inspired by the fact that, you know, Snapchat just sort of pops up on your phone and there it is.
Yeah,
and, you know, you're checking your phone when you wake up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. It just sort of, it's infiltrated every aspect of our life and it's taken over in some ways.
And now for Space Oddity Films, you already have, you have a GChat one, you have an Instagram.
We're doing another Instagram one. So
are you?
Yeah, we felt like, so I'm pitching the show now as a half-hour anthology, like a Twilight Zone meets Unfriended. And we've got a series of ideas we want to do in half-hour format and in short-form format. So the second or third one we did was sort of like an L.A. noir Instagram thriller, black and white. I wanted to do something like Aronofsky's Pi or Christopher Nolan's Following. We integrated Instagram into that. But, you know, now that we've had some success with sort of a straightforward Snapchat horror film, it's like, all right, what's as relevant as Snapchat? Instagram. I don't know if anything is touching it. So we're going to go back and do something with that again. That's a little bit more along the lines of what we've had some success with.
Very good.
Did you make the movie entirely on an iPhone?
No, we thought about, okay, let's shoot this vertically with an iPhone.
Oh, God.
And then have it live on Snapchat, either as on the Discover section where, you know, splicing it up,
right,
or, you know, we'd set up its own channel and splice it up into several Snapchats. But I found myself feeling, I don't know, I found myself feeling very limited visually in terms of what I wanted to do. You know, there's a lot we wanted to accomplish with the lighting in the room, with the composition of the shots, how she moved. And I felt like we were losing some of that. So in my mind, it was like, you know what, I'll do that next time. A few people have asked us, hey, can we cut it down vertically? I was like, no, please don't cut it down. yeah, because I just feel like you'd be losing a lot.
I hate when people, like, film subway fights vertical. It's yeah. Like, no one wants to watch that.
To answer your question, yeah, we shot it on a 6D.
Okay.
Yeah, so we shot it pretty standard. Although I would like to do something, you know, vertical. It makes sense. For the genre that I'm exploring and for the demographic as well, you know, for the people that are watching it, they're used to watching things on their phones.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, the sort of give and take between, like, Twitter causing everybody to all of a sudden really focus on brevity and be concise, and, you know, and then I guess Vine, and then Instagram, and then Snapchat, but catering material to the medium is, so you talked about the writing process. Are you still thinking in terms of those chunks?
The next one we're going to do is, like I said, is an Instagram horror film, and I think we're going to do the same thing. The only way I'm sort of thinking about it is almost from more of like a producer slash casting standpoint, like, okay, well, if I'm going to do something about Instagram, what if I had someone that's popular on Instagram in it? So it's more, a little bit more natural to the audience, to the medium. So that's how I'm thinking about it. I don't know. How long does Instagram give you? 15 seconds?
I think so.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready to do like a 10-part, 15. Like, I don't know. I just feel like it's a riskier strategy. I mean, we could always cut it up and try it that way. We could try. We could do it. Yeah.
Being a filmmaker first and foremost. I don't know. It's almost like taking a step back in terms of like having these accessories and having these options, and then really cutting it down to
right. And I feel, like I said, I feel like I'm already like. We're already so bare bones with what we're doing. I don't feel the need to pull it back. I'd rather go bigger if I can. But like I said, you know, doing something vertical, I think would be cool.
That'd be an interesting challenge. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I would like that.
No. Well, I'm sure there's going to be, you know, the festivals. I'm sure we're going to start seeing vertical movies.
That's so irritating.
Yeah. I haven't gotten used to it.
Well, there was Tribeca did a whole Snapchat. Like showcase, like, yeah. I don't know if it's like happening right now. It might have just been online. I think there's some sort of digital showcase with Snapchat. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny that the standard was set. You know, at this point, I guess even like original black and white films are still relatively square.
Right.
The widescreen goes back like 80 years, but it's just kind of arbitrary. It's not. I mean, it's cinematic, and CinemaScope is is something to behold, but there's not really like a specific reason for it.
Right, that's sort of my point. Like, I would only do it if I felt like it served something aesthetic to the experience of watching the phone through like the experience of the people that are in it. So if they're on Snapchat, maybe let's see it how they might see it. So we're also talking about doing a film about a sort of a 2001 type thing about a smart thermostat. About a couple that gets a smart thermostat and it falls in love with the girl in the relationship and tries to destroy the relationship. And we've written it, and it's the whole thing is shot, if we shoot it, it's to be directed through the POV of the thermostat.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so like a fisheye lens looking out on their bedroom, and every scene just hits in that area. And they're coming in out of frame and just very like HAL POV, you know?
Nice.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you think about doing full-length features, or right now you're just into shorts?
Well, you know, I've written them. The issue is getting them financed, getting them made. You know, I spent the better half of last year writing a feature, hit some hurdles and trying to get it made as anyone would. And it's just, you know, I could write something, spend a few weeks with it, shoot it, put it up online, and there it is.
Right.
So there's an appeal. I do feel this urge to be doing longer form stuff. I don't quite feel like I'm using my full skill set. I mean, a 3-minute film, you can only say and show so much as far as the story goes. So yeah, I would absolutely like to do longer form stuff.
Sure.
It's just an issue of getting it on screen.
Yeah, that makes sense. I love short film. I'm a huge advocate for short film because I have a short attention span, so it's like excellent for me.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think about anthology films like ABC, stuff like that? I mean, do you get any inspiration from that, or are you just kind of it's a separate thing?
My favorite film 2 years ago was Wild Tales.
Okay.
Did you see that? The Argentinian anthology film.
We did. Or you didn't. Never mind. You didn't. I did.
Okay.
Yeah, I do. I do like those a lot, and I'm actually thinking about, like I said, I'm like pitching a half-hour version of this when I'm working on. But like, oh, well, what if it could live as like a 5-6-part film anthology, all relating to tech,
social
different
media.
Tech devices, apps, whatever. But yeah, I'm definitely a fan of the genre. I think the last one I watched was Trick or Treat.
Okay.
Do you see that one?
Yeah.
It's okay.
I think we talked about it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was on our Halloween episode.
Right. So, I dig that genre. And I feel like they're, it oftentimes feels like they're giving new directors an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fun to see that. Like, I remember Swanberg and I think Ty West, was that VHS that they did?
They were in one of the VHSs.
Right.
They've done ABCs.
Right. So yeah, I'm certainly a fan of the genre, and I would love to do one.
Nice. Yeah. Very good.
I was thinking between the ABCs or VHS. Well, I guess VHS Viral even kind of tried to use more and more of the tech. But I was thinking, like, Black Mirror is one that sort of really, while commenting on the technology and using it, all these stories wind up being, like, very, you know, human sort of frailty stories. Sorry, I guess there's not really a question in there.
I love Black Mirror. I mean, it's was, like, my favorite thing that I've seen the past, you know, year or two.
Yeah. Well, okay, so I guess that was kind of the point I was getting at, that I get most of those kind of, you know, jump 15 years in the future, but it seems like almost trickier to guess, like, where things are going next year and the year after that. But social media is definitely the sort of the watermark, the high watermark of where things are and will be soon. Yeah. There's something poignant about 3 seconds, and you said you're working on Instagram movies. And
my concern is that, like, I think what good sci-fi does and what Black Mirror accomplishes is, like, you could watch 2001 now and sort of understand the analysis they were doing on man's relationship with machine. Mm-hmm. And I think Black Mirror is doing something similar, where they're jumping ahead and they're almost being more subtle with it. I feel like, you know, imagine watching a short film about, like, early days Facebook. I think it might look ridiculous. So, like, I'm a little concerned about shelf life of what I'm doing. It's like, you know.
Well, yeah. Zarin doesn't do Snapchat, so he thinks it's ridiculous anyway.
It is ridiculous.
I just send selfies of myself with filters. I think that's the point, right?
You send them to
You're
yourself?
Me?
No, I send them to my friends, obviously. I mean, sometimes if I get a good one, I'm not going to lie, I'll screen grab it.
Sure.
Obviously. Yeah. Obviously. What's your favorite filter?
I mean, I gotta go rainbow. I'm like a rainbow for life. Yeah. I mean, that was an earlier version of the script was the last beat. So I don't know if you saw, one person called this out, but the name of the Snapchat account in the film is Mr. Smiles.
Okay, I didn't see that. Yeah.
Sort of purposely, like, didn't want people to see it, just because it's not relevant to the story. It was to an earlier draft. In the earlier draft, it was a Snapchat account named Mr. Smiles, harassing this girl. And the last shot wasn't a filter, but it was just sort of close on her face. And as it came in, a big smiley face came across and two eyes.
Oh, nice.
And then it cut to black. But then I was like,
because you can also draw on Snapchats, right. You see.
I knew that.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, that's good, but this, the rainbow puke
it's perfect
would be
the way it was.
So much better. So
it was perfect.
That was the first time we worked with a visual effects person. So that wasn't actually Snapchat.
It was all
custom. I mean, it was a duplicate. It was close as she could get. But that was all post.
Nice,
yeah.
Nice. It was great, and it was the perfect filter for the end.
Oh, great.
Nice. I am a Coachella flower headband person right now. That's like my jam. Darren because and I do face swaps sometimes. Whatever. I wanted to ask a little bit about your crew of people you're working with,
sure.
Space Oddity Films.
Yeah.
And it seems like you guys kind of take turns writing, directing, things like that. And I wondered, are you guys all friends, or what's the deal with that?
We don't even know each other.
You hate each other.
No, so my good friend Adam Bloom, we met in New York doing stand-up together.
Okay.
Yeah, like several years ago, 5 years ago at this point. He ended up moving to L.A. with his now wife. I ended up moving out a couple years after him, and we were good friends in New York, and I moved out there, and we started collaborating. I'd say, you know, we write some stuff together, and we both write stuff on our own as well. In terms of the stuff we've been doing, he directed Runners.
Right. Which, another good ending.
Yeah, great. So the sort of the core team is Adam and I as co-producers. And everything that all the projects we do sort of comes through our filters. Even if I'm writing and directing, he's sort of still, you know, reading the scripts, giving me notes, sort of, you know, high level creative guidance on the project. It's still very much our voice. And then we've got a couple other guys we work with. My buddy Tristan Clope does music.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
Is he doing your sound editing too?
Doing it both.
Because it's very important on the small screen, like on your phone, the sound editing, and it's top notch, in 3 seconds.
He's great. And he's done a lot of really cool, not so much in 3 seconds, but in the other films we've done, we oftentimes try to mimic Cliff Martinez.
So
the sort of really synthy electro score that I really like, and he's just nailed it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then my buddy Nelson has shot and edited for us, and that's sort of the crew right there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very good.
You said this is the first time you've sort of dipped into horror. Has that...
We've tiptoed around it.
It's kind of horrific, some of it. I mean, not in a bad way. No. That's, your movies
right.
are horrific.
But it's all been sort of, I don't know, not
thrillery.
Straightforward.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We sort of, that was, I think we were both like, I don't know if horror is our thing. Like, I don't know if we could do a good job at it. But I just felt like for this type of story, we had to. And now we're sort of like, yeah, let's do more of this. Because we had a lot of fun doing it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not uncommon that, like, whether it's documentarians like Tobe Hooper, or someone right. who comes from outside the genre, kind of lends a really new look at
yeah.
horror.
Well, that's
what
we were. That's what we were saying is that, it's not a coincidence that a lot of filmmakers start in horror too. And what we found, and I didn't know this, is just there's such a community around the genre. Mm. Unlike, I guess there's, strong comedy community, but not in the same way, because comedy's sort of fragmented. It's not just like comedy movies. Like, there's horror movie community.
Yeah.
It's very tight-knit, and I'm just learning about it, and we think it's awesome, because it's like, there's all these people engaging with our work that didn't really in the past, so it's exciting for us.
Well, thanks for joining us, Alex.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us here in Bryant Park.
Good to be here.
Yeah.
We're looking forward to what comes next.
Great. Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you.
So lately, I've been also catching up on Clay McLeod Chapman's Self-Storage on 451. A couple episodes back, we had Clay McLeod Chapman talk about the Self-Storage and sort of the origins of that. And it's a good book that is progressively getting better. I think the latest issue was number 4 of 6. So, still reading, still interested.
Nice.
I'm excited. The art is fantastic. That's exciting. Check out Self-Storage. And Clay McLeod Chapman's Fangoria podcast, The Pumpkin Pie Show.
Yeah.
So this was pretty dynamic as far as, outdoor lunch hour review experiments.
We'll see. We'll see. You're editing this one, so have fun with all that ambient sound there.
So as I said before, check us out on iTunes and Stitcher and now Google Play Music. And give us a review. Mm-hmm. Share us with a friend. Help us spread the podcast. We are on social media.
We are on Twitter at Rants Macabre. We are on Facebook at The Rants Macabre. You can even send us an email, which people do, at therantsmacabre@gmail.com. Check out our website, which is therantsmacabre.com. I didn't know what happened.
Dot biz? What? Dot ca?
Dot gov? What else do we do? I think that's it.
Have a YouTube page.
We have a
we'll
YouTube
get some
page.
Updating.
Yeah, look at our YouTube page. Darren has an album. What aren't we doing?
I do. Apophenia is on the Fangoria website right now.
Right now, goddamn.
And it's also on iTunes and Apple Music and Spotify.
Check that out. You've been listening to The Rants Macabre, a presentation of the Fangoria Podcast Network, produced by Darren Rosario and Thomas DeFeo, and executive produced by Ken Hanley of Fangoria Entertainment. For press opportunities, advertising inquiries, and information about The Rants Macabre, contact Ken at Fangoria.com.
This is me, Darren, signing off.
And this is Mindy. Thanks.